here. Why are we in Saint-Imier in 2023? We see that we are a lot of people from all around the world. That may not surprise us. We are used to anarchist movement. The media are quite surprised. I had this week a lot of calls, and every time the same stupid question, huh? There still exist anarchists? And why do we come to Saint-Imier? So the first question, I will not talk with you today because it's, you know the answer. But maybe the second question would be from some interest to say, why are we here in Saint-Imier, and why this meeting is not another part of the world? So, and why do I that? I'm an historian, and I worked. I started in 2010 in a research program on history of federalism at the University of Fribourg in Switzerland. On the history of on the beginning of anarchist movement in the 19th centuries. So I would like you to take some approach to these studies I made. Just that you know, that's the book sorted in German, voila, and in French the translation is shorter. Because, and if you don't want to read anymore, this that's not my book. It's from Marian Enkel from Sierra Lausanne, a really nice short history of anarchism. So, all these books are at the book fair. Voila. So, but let's start from now and here. We are in Saint-Imier. Voila. I have seen in this. I hope that the pictures are. It's not huge, but we will make it right. So we're in this lovely valley of Jura. Like in a picture book or tourist brochure. And this should be the cradle of anarchism. But this well is mostly known for watchmaking, like this famous brand Longines. We have seen the factory, I could imagine. And why this region was the meeting moment in 1872 of the global anarchist movement. And to make it even more complicated, oh, I have some pictures. Why this guy like his is called Admar Schwitzgebel, a watchmaker, turned to be anarchist, watchmaking. You see a lot of things that in our mind maybe doesn't make sense, but they make sense. I hope you agree with me after this conference. If not, we discuss on that. So, well, this really famous also organization, the Fédération Jurassienne, who was active in between 1870 until 1881. So quite a small history, but we'll see, quite influent. Just now, perhaps you've also seen there's a kind of recuperation, I know, said in English, kind of revival of the memory of anarchism in Saint-Imier. There's even a Rue Bakunin, in a quite strange place, close to the Innovation Park. But we are re-talking about anarchism here, and also the authorities are really proud that they are, for some topic, something like a capital. So, but and as the media today, they say, how many anarchists or many people interested in anarchists are here? That's not the first time, perhaps, that here world history is written, is done, but a lot of people, they don't recognize that. It was in 1872, this famous congress we will talk about. It was only 1922, 50 years later, that was the first commemorance reunion in Saint-Imier with, here in blue, you will not see it, but that's the last still living participant of the Congress of 72. It's Enrico Malatesta, the famous Italian anarchist, was here in 1872 at 19 years old person, and he was there in 22. And in 1972, there was another place here in the restaurant La Clef, where also Bakunin made a conference. This house was destroyed by the Swiss army. And then, perhaps this recent history, perhaps we have lived that, 2012 was also this first recent meeting here. with a lot of interest, and now we are, of course, in the actuality of 23. So, well, but still, let's make it even more complicated. Also suspicious. The anarchists in the Bernese Jura were watchmakers. That's an apparent contradiction. The watch industry and anarchism, because that are just two different worlds, I would say. Watchmaking industry is like the showcase of Swiss industry. It stands for regarded values as discipline, precision, punctuality, capitalism, money, luxury. Anarchism seems to embody a total different thing. For other people, seems to show only death, black, destruction, chaos. Here at and the just interesting thing that the history of the watchmaking and the history of anarchism is a parallel history. Just the factory of Longines you see there just opened in the same year as the first section of the International Working Class Association, l'Association Internationale Travailleur, was founded here in 1866. So there's a kind of parallel story, and you will see these two worlds are quite connected. Well, I'm not the first, of course, not the first person or historian or who worked on that and was asking why these watchmakers became anarchists and they became so quite famous in the movement. There were a lot of explications, but they quite didn't satisfy me too much, because they look anarchism as something isolated, as something exotic, isolated from general history. And I think the important thing to understand anarchism in that time and the emergence of anarchism worldwide is to put it in its context, temporal context and local context. Because there are a lot of interactions between the local and the global and the time. That's what I a little bit call a kind of micro history. A micro history, global history. So it's kind of my approach, you will see. I was quite interested in the simultaneity of things that doesn't seem to fit together, like the factory here, or like this guy here, also quite known, Pierre-Joseph Proudhon, who wrote one of the first like definitions of anarchism. That you can read here. I've traduced it in English. The freest nations are those in which the state power has the least influence and power, or in which its functions are the most limited. And the experience of century proves that the best government is that which knows best how to make itself superfluous. Do we need parasites to work and priests to speak to God, nor do we need elected people to govern us? The exploitation of man by man, someone had said, is theft. Well, the government of man by man is slavery. End of the quote. So, how does it fit together? There is one linking point between this capitalism, watchmaking at a time, and anarchism, and this is globalization. That's a key word for me, it's globalization. In the second half of the 19th century, the society or the world underwent profound changes. Then can be compared to the globalization, the changes of the our globalization, the called globalizations that started 30, 40 years ago. Historians use for that reason the term of modern globalization for the second half of the 19th century. And now we will see a little bit how this globalization changed society here and changed the mind of people, of some people. So let's compare people. For example, this guy here, that's the founder of Longines, of the watchmaking, of the watch factory Longines. Why do I start with him and not with an anarchist? Because it's quite interesting. The next quote that he wrote in a publication of Longines about day time. How people perceive day time. I read in English. From one end of the universe to the other, instantaneous communications, the ease of rapid travel have modified and unified the conditions of business, eliminated or shortened the long leisure of waiting, given, in short, to the smallest moment, an active value, dangerous to neglect. Man no longer acts around him with immediate power. He will manifest itself across space as suddenly as he pleases. An event that takes place in any part of the world and which may have an influence on our destinies is known to us at minute's notice. We need to take advantage of unexpected information, make sudden decisions, change our batteries at moment's notice, increase our numbers, speed up things. Let's run to the telegraph, telephone our distant friends, take the fastest train, lift double, but face everything. So, and of course, the result is buy a Longines watch, and then you will able to survive in this really stressful, busy time of the modern globalization. And of course, that's publicity, that's propaganda for a watchmaking factory, but shows really how time changes and that there is a connection between the quote shows that there is a connection between technologies and changes in life of ordinary people. This gravure, The Progress of Century, shows different new technology that merged at that time. You see the train, the steam train or the steam boat. You see the telegraph, this guy making telegraph with the Morse code. And you see this rotation press that is a form to print really fast and cheap. These innovations revolutionized communication and transport. They brought somehow the world together to a way it never was in history, and accelerated changes in economic and social life immensely. We cannot imagine how fast changes went on in that time. I will now show you just to show you why I say that on two technological or innovation at that time and what it had to make with anarchism. Just I start with the post. Now you can say the post is nothing. The postal system is nothing new. Well, there always have been someone who carries a letter from A to B, but something changed radically in this time when the anarchist movement merged. It's not only that by train and steamboat, everything went faster, just to send a letter, but the national states started to deal with each other, to make agreements between the states, and international organizations like the Universal Postal Union, who is based in Bern in 1874, homogenized the price for sending something. So, for example, if you send a letter to London, it may have been the same price to send it to Moscow, or it has to be the same price to send it from to New York. That depends. The question of how many kilometers something did doesn't affect really the price. And just, we are talking about Saint-Imier, that's a village, a small town at that time of 6,000 people. That look at this at these numbers, what was dealt at the railway station in 1 year. So you have about 11,000 payment orders. Just people went to the postal station to make payments to another part of the world, of course. We have 60,000 circular letters, that letters that are sent to a lot of people. We have 50,000 telegrams. We have 53,000 personal packages, 141,000 letters, and 212,000 newspapers in Saint-Imier, a village of 6,000 people living here. Today in Saint-Imier, we are not dealing 212,000 newspapers and 53,000 parcels. And we are saying we are living in a time of Zalando and all this kind of internet economy. So, and of course, you will see what I want to say, a lot of these newspapers and letters and packages and payment that went out of sentiment came in were, of course, anarchists. So let's show that. The anarchists, they profited from the new technologies and legal innovations. They sent letters, like this letter here. You cannot see it exactly, but it's like a circular letter that went from Saint-Imier to all the anarchist federation, all the anti-authoritarian federations of that time. And for instance, and also the after the Congress of Saint-Imier in 1872, well, there were only 14 delegates here, not a lot, but they represented about 200,000 anarchists worldwide. And so from Saint-Imier, they sent the circular of Saint-Imier with the four resolutions. Here in Saint-Imier, of course, printed with a rotation press, and that turned the world real fast. So maybe it seems obvious, but you cannot make a conference for a global movement with everybody's here. That's not possible. Everybody can travel here, or has the possibility to travel. It's expensive, and you need free time. And it's people, they hadn't that. They worked all the time, and you need technologies to spread the.
Okay, I'm really sorry. Right now we need one English into Spanish and English into French translator. They are alone, they can't translate straight for 2 hours. So who could do this in this room? Raise the hand. Okay, this would be for French? Okay, tu peux aller, merci. Spanish? Okay, can go there. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Can give me a sign when it's okay. It's okay? Also for... it's okay. So let's make a sign if I have to speak slowly. So one letter sent from Saint-Imier, for example, went to this town. Maybe somehow recognize it, even if it's really small. It's Cadiz in Andalusia at the Atlantic, this harbor city. And that's the, and now I show you a quote for a response. The anarchists of the Swiss watchmaker anarchists sent a letter to Cadiz just to announce that the Congress of 72 took place and what was decided. And now they become the answer from Cadiz in Spain. And that is written, maybe the Spanish Castellano speaking can read it directly. I do the translation, what this Antonio Condor writes, the secretary, the foreign secretary of the section of the Federation of Gaditana from Cadiz. Having met in General Assembly this Federation of the 18th of this month, it agreed to adhere in its entirety to the agreements taken at the Anti-Authoritarian Congress of Saint-Imier, as those resolutions are in conformity in all their parts with the anarchic and collectivist principles that the Federation of Cadiz supports. Receive, compagnon, admire the warmest embrace of these brothers who love you so much. Cheers, anarchy and collectivism. So, on the one hand, this letter testifies the cross-border communication for on long distances. But not only that, that doesn't make a letter really special, because people were used to get a letter from somehow of the relatives who went to Northern America from migrants. But this is different, because here two people are communicated, but they don't know each other. And you feel in this kind of how they write a form of closeness, of emotional closeness, really really strong, and that shows really that there is a connection between people here and people in Cadiz in Spain, as it could be in other places. So through this huge distance, and thanks also to the technical conditions at the time. So that shows really that the conception of space can change absolutely. Because what happened? If an anarchist watchmaker here in Saint-Imier received these letters, and of course this letter then was read to the other ones, voila, it makes a closeness between people that are living real distance, huh? That means that the people here, I say, okay, we are not the only ones in the world to believe in anarchy and in the revolution, but also in Cadiz and in all other parts of the world. You can imagine that they got a lot of letters back after the Congress of Saint-Imier. We're not alone, so something is happened worldwide. The anarchism is on his road. And what makes that the people are closer than to someone far away, made with ideological closer, then to the neighbor who is geographically closer, but ideologically far away. So that's, perhaps you know that a little bit, like in, we can imagine that a little bit. So, and quite special is also, these people, they doesn't know each other, they doesn't speak the same language, they work in totally different branches, harbor, especially harbor workers in Cadiz and here watchmaking, and there is this kind of connection, and that's really strong, and that in few years of organization. The other thing I meant to point out, you find in the sources that the relation, we always were talking about the international working class organization, that's not really international. It's not in between states. Of course, anarchism is quite strange to talk about international between states, but it's more between localities. Localities where there were anarchist group. And just as for a lot of you, Saint-Imier is a code for anarchism, for history, and for the huge majority in the world, they've never heard about Saint-Imier. But perhaps the other ones knew Bern, the capital of Switzerland. So at that time was the same. The anarchists in Cadiz, they knew in Switzerland there is Saint-Imier. They knew nothing else about Switzerland. But there is Saint-Imier, and there were the other anarchist watchmakers. So they make with this alternative communication networks, that you create alternative views on space. That's another, for me, quite interesting thing. So let's pass to the next technological innovation, was a kind of the basis of globalization. We changed the notion of space and time, and that's a telegraph. If the train shortened distances, the telegraph dissolved them. Through electromagnetic transmission, a message, it means a code, could be transmitted without loss of time, theoretically. There was a space and time, they're not even linked anymore. Theoretically, because at the every code had to be stopped at the border by nations, and a new person had to retype it. So there was no telegraph connection across the borders. However, the acceleration of communication was tremendous. I will show you that with an example. In 1865, Abraham Lincoln, the President of the United States of America, was assassinated. The message of this worldwide important event took 13 days to come to Europe. What Europe means, to London. Just 16 years later, there was another assassination, this time of the Tsar of Russia, Alexander II, in 81 in St. Petersburg. It took 12 hours, the message from St. Petersburg to London. That's acceleration. And what one thing is, of course, I want to point it out, it's a part of this question about change in acceleration of life. In this assassination of the Tsar was involved one person who was here at the Congress in 1872. This figure is not really known in history of anarchism. It's Olga Lyubatovich. That's a former Russian revolutionary. She was in Switzerland as medicine student, as other Russians, and they devoted their life to revolution. And she was involved in this major historical moment. So, and what about anarchists? Of course, it seems to be banal. They wrote telegraphs, and that's quite also interesting to see. Telegraph were really, really, really expensive. When you sent a newspaper, it was just you paid the kilo or the unit. If you send a telegraph, you pay each letter. That's make it really, really expensive. So you can now ask for which circumstances anarchists did run to the telegraph bureau. And all the telegraph I saw, or the mostly I saw, are for us quite banal telegraphs. Greetings, and for the mostly are a meeting of anarchists somewhere. Huh? During the meeting, they go together. One go at the telegraph bureau and send a telegraph to other section to say, "We are here, assembled in the town of Cordoba, for example, or Bologna. We just sent you greetings to Saint-Emilion." And why that? That's so important to construct an imaginary collective identity of a global movement. Huh? Like in families, they wrote postcards to say, "Hey, I didn't forget you. I'm now in Germany, but I didn't forget you." They wrote telegraphs, say, "We are there." Huh? And because the people couldn't travel. So, and there was one moment, as one commemoration was always the La Commune de Paris, the Commune uprising in Paris on the 18th of March, 1871. Each year, this event was commemorated in different places, and they sent each other greetings, telegram to say, "We do it also." But sometimes they had to chiffre, you say, to code the content, because of course the state could read, because it was a a state monopole, the communication telegraph. So you had codes, and the other person needed a decoder to read it. So now let's talk about watchmaking. Because a letter or a telegraph from afar could provide an experience of globality. The world is big. But it doesn't mean at the same time that you turn to be a revolutionary. So, and dreaming of the triumph of anarchism. So it needs some other ingredients. And one here ingredient is the kind of perception of crisis, the perception that the locality has to do with the global. And people here in the watchmaking industry, they feel that because of watchmaking. Watchmaking is a tremendously globalized industry. All watches produced here were sold abroad. So they were absolutely all dependent from global market, all dependent from the customers abroad. And major event like a war changed everything in positive. A war was super for business. Because that's, don't think about watchmaking at the time, a luxury industry. That's here they will produce ordinary watches. It's not Geneva. Geneva is luxury. Here's ordinary watches. That means, of course, pocket watches at that time. That means watches that even a normal person in certain countries or a working man can afford once in his life. And it's the first time in this year that the whole armies were stocked out at watches. All the soldiers get their watches. So there's also quite interesting link between wealth of Switzerland and wars in watchmaking industry. We don't think about that. That's one thing that makes that the watchmakers here, they had a really strong perception of globality because of this, of the market, and also because of big changes. That's quite complicated. I do not enter in the details. But watchmaking industry doesn't mean that someone makes a watch from A to Z. That today is still not the case. There's a highly diversified way of production. There are about 100 steps you have to make a watch. And it's about 100 profession, different profession to make a watch. But there are great changes that from the work at home, you see that on the left, and the work in factories, like here in Longines. That's huge change that time that we call industrialization. We call it centralizations, because there are a lot of machines doing work. Centralization because a lot of more steps of production are done under the same roof. And you see a lot of women working. That's new. Factory means employees, female employees. And that's new. And the thing is, why did they start to build here factory? That's because of the global concurrence in watchmaking industries. The Americans started to build their own factories, watchmaking factories, and the Swiss watchmaking was world market leader, get concurrence, and then to face this concurrence, they had also to build factories here and to employ women. And that's also why I say that, because they could pay them less. That's a fact. They saw that in the States they hired, the factory owner didn't invest in formation. They hired women doing the work for some years, and then they exchanged. They even hired Chinese travel workers in San Francisco to make watches. All this global migration of work in factories, you can already observe at that time. And industry machine means capitalism, a lot of capital. You need a lot of money to buy a machine. and run a machine. And that changed the rule totally, completely of your work. And another, that's really talking about on the meta frame, like big changes that doesn't make in 1 or 2 years. But one of the main changes is with the factory is that once you were paid by piece you made. So for example, you just made from the watch a small piece and you had a price for each piece. So theoretically, if you produce faster, you get more, theoretically, than change of the market prices. In the factory, you sell your time. You sell your labor time to the capitalist. That means if there are technological innovation, faster machine, the production goes faster, but doesn't mean automatically that the worker earns more. So that's huge changes in the way of work. And new is the règlement d'usine, the factory rules. That's new, and you see exactly this kind of rationalization of time, really important. Just that at the moment that the person sells not their work but their time, so if we can save time, it's on benefit of the capitalist. So he tries just to short out, to delete, like unused time. So it starts, it was forbidden to drink alcohol during work. It was really common. Forbidden to smoke, forbidden to sing songs. That's quite important for an anarchist. Forbidden to read. And the payment just starts at the moment when the machine runs. So the time you have to go to the factory doesn't count. And you're paid by hour, not paid by month. And something quite special in Saint-Imier, there was different local times. That means that the factory of Longines, as the biggest employer, said for the payment, there is a Longines time, a factory time, and this one is advances 5 minutes to the local time, municipal time of Saint-Imier. That's fairly absurd, totally absurd, because the municipal time is the precise time linked by telegraph to the Neuchâtel Observatoire and to the one in Paris. So it's like the precise time, and every day they got the message, now it's 12 o'clock, and they just reputed the watch on 12 o'clock. But the guy there in the Longines said, I don't care, my time is the one who counts. And why? And he's wrong, but he has the capital and he pays. And so he can say that. And during about 10 years, he obligates to his employees to follow the launching time, even it's totally wrong time. That's quite this concurrence on domination of time at that time. It's really, really interesting. So I told you that it's a global market. Just here, image of the main exportation markets of Longines. You see, they don't sell watches in Switzerland. They sell in the United States and to other countries. And what make it, I've already told that makes it that you can have a great period of increasing, of good market, but you can also have big crises. And that's are the number of watches produced in Switzerland in between 1851 until 1961. You see, get high and down. But especially for us is this period. That's the period of the Jura Federation, of the beginning of anarchism. That's this 1866 until 1881. And you see there is a huge crisis after 1874. And if I say huge crisis, that's dramatic, absolutely. We have around, the origin of the crisis is a world economic crisis. It's the Vienna crash at the Börse in English, at the Wall stock market, thank you. So you see, you have a financial crisis that affects the material production. You remember 2008? Exactly the same. So, but at that time, people didn't see that. Just they saw, whoa, nobody wants our watches. And that means in these years, the exportation of watches goes back on 60%. That means only in this valley of Saint-Imi, 750 companies went bankrupt. And that means, of course, all the people lost their work, job. And you have to know, there is no social security at the time. The state doesn't provide anything of social security. So the only chance you have is to be in a syndicate and have paid for years something from a salary to this kind of insurances to get something. So that's a big point for the anarchist syndicates, just to recruit people, because it gives some safety. If you lose your job, you can even not stay where you live. You have to go back to the place of origin, it's called, because it's where your father and grandfather was born, because they are responsible for the poor people. So you lose everything. And that can make like that in small years. And if you lose, and that means you lose a lot and you have already few. Just an example, that's like a social history. A watchmaker earned a day around 3 francs a day. That's really a median. The costs of a family of that time, and I say costs, that means something to eat, a roof, and maybe something if you get ill, doesn't mean to go on holiday or something else, is about 5 francs 35. So you see, okay, everybody in the family has to work, at least the couple and also the kids, and there's so few march. So if a crisis comes, it's tremendous. And the crises are not as tremendous for everybody here in this region. That shows this graph. Let me explain this graph. So what you see here is the categories of taxes. You have the richest one. There are 15 categories, and the richest families or the richest houses are the category one. So, and the poorest and category five. And then have a look on the two lines. 1866, that's the beginning of anarchist movement here, and 1885 is the end of the Fédération Jurassienne. What you see is that there are a lot of more poor families. A lot of more, that's this that's that here. You have a lot of more poor families. The rich, they stay rich. And the main reason is real estate. Real estate is the guarantee to go through the crisis and to start on a high level. It seems to be quite accurate. And what you see is here, let's call it middle class, it breaks totally down. And the anarchists, they feel that. You can read that really well in the different text they wrote, that something was happening on a global level. And I just write it, I quote here from this writing of Schwitzgebel. What does the current situation tell us? The watchmaking industry, like many others important industry, is undergoing the loss of modern production. It is entering the phase of centralized productions in the hand of financial companies. It is witnessing the disappearance of the middle class, leaving only a few rich entrepreneurs at the top and a proletariat on the bottom. So they just analyzed this bigger getting social injustice social or social differences due to a global process. And what was their response? Let's unite the forces worldwide with other anarchists and change the rules of market. finally, and in this context, now we are in 1872, in this context, this this famous Congress was held in the house Hotel Central. You think you have seen it just there on the main place of Saint-Imier. The building is still there. They want to destroy it 15 years ago. Fortunately, there was a civic movement to preserve this place where really world history was written. As you perhaps have read or heard, the four resolutions of the Congress of Saint-Imier of 1872 are considered as kind of basic charter of anarchism. On the one hand, they mark the final detachment of anarchism from centralist socialism, which later will be called communism of the Marxist and Soviet type. On the other hand, the resolutions contains already the two basic orientations of the anarchism movement, which also later will split a little movement a bit. One resolution puts the emphasis on trade unionism, on working towards a general strike. This concept of general strike is invented just in these years. Another focus on the spontaneous actions to bring the world to overthrow. So those both the syndicalist and the insurrectionary anarchism were inherent in this four resolution, and they make only two pages. That's also the reason why Saint-Imier remained a reference in anarchism history through the whole development of the movement worldwide. And if you perhaps just, the question is always asked, why did they met here in Saint-Imier and not other one? I think we have to put at least three reasons why. The first one is Switzerland or Saint-Imier is in the center of Europe. And just before the Congress of Saint-Imier, there was held the fourth General Congress of the International, founded in 1974, and this Congress was held in Den Haag, in Holland. So the delegates from the, especially from the South and Eastern Western Europe, that means Spain, Italy, France, had to go back to Switzerland to go home. So there was one main reason, just we met here and not somewhere in Norway, for example, for instance. There was one reason. The second reason is just here in Switzerland, you have something as a democracy, republic, democracy. It's not a good democracy, but this compared to the other countries, a really good democracy, because the other countries are all monarchies at the time. And in Switzerland, since 1848, you have a republican democratic system. Who sees itself as in the like testamentary of the French Revolution, so this kind, this big democratic revolution, and it's also quite interesting, of course, because of that there are the liberty of assembly and the liberty of press, so that's the reason they could be here, and so perhaps it's quite interesting to see. They knew in Switzerland, the government knew what was happening here quite well. They knew it also because the ambassadors of Berlin, Paris, Madrid, St. Petersburg wrote letters to Swiss government saying, hey, watch out, in Saint-Imier, in Saint-Imier, they are the biggest terrorist cells, they say real terrorists, do something against them, stop them. They are going to make a revolution in Europe. And what was the reaction of the Swiss government? No reaction. No reaction in sense, and you find that written, we do not the shitty jobs of the monarchies. We are Democrats, Republican. And even if they know that they were anti-state, they still saw them in the same revolutionary republican tradition, and they didn't want to make the job for the monarchies. And of course, the embassies of Berlin so didn't understand that. So, and it's also quite interesting that the anarchists sent circular letters around to the different sections, federation of the association, to tell about the Congress of Saint-Imier. The ambassadors did the same. There's a circular written by the foreign minister of Spain, Mr. Blas, to all governments in Europe, saying, in Saint-Imier and in Saint-Vier are the dangerous, most dangerous organizations. So they use the same way of communication. So that's the second reason, this democratic tradition in Switzerland. And the third reason is that Saint-Imier was at that time, or this region was at that time, already a well-known anarchist area. They knew that the Fédération Jurassienne had planned a regional congress here at the beginning of September, so they decided, oh, let's join both congresses, make a regional congress and the international congress. And a lot of people wanted to see these quite famous anarchist watchmakers because they were quite known written papers they have sent, and the newspapers sent from here all around the world. I will not enter in detail. So so Switzerland or Saint-Imier is not only a place to make something, but it is a place where something already happened, and they put that into written, what already happened here. So, and what happened here, I call it like a labor of anarcho-syndicalism. I think that's the main contribution to anarchist movement is anarcho-syndicalism here. There were a lot of strikes and labor fights, and there was quite a big structure already of syndicates that started to be syndicates of mutual aid help for health insurances, for example, or for loss of work. But they got more and more resistance unions, just to you pay for general strike, La Grève Générale. And there was a kind of proudness and belief in victory. For example, on the left side, you cannot read that, but that's a declaration that an atelier is made on strike. That means that nobody can go there to work. So, and then that was published in the local newspaper. And that means that everybody who wants to go there as Streikbrecher, how do you say Streikbrecher? Als a strikebreaker, just the name were published in the newspaper. So a huge social pressure, because of course if you want to strike, you have to be unite. And just this small quote I find really interesting, shows a lot. That's a conflict that was just half a year before the Congress of Saint-Imier at Christmas 71-72. What happened? The graveur Guillaucheur, the gravers on the watches cases, write to the chef saying that, I can quote that if I find it here, hurt in our intimate convictions to be, I have to say, the boss closed the atelier at Christmas. That was the reason of the fight. And their response, there was a letter here, and under you find all the names of someone just threw out his name, because of course it's just dangerous just to say, okay, I'm for this protest. Hurt in our intimate convictions to be obligated to sanctify a day which we do not recognize as sacred to us, at the same time, it hurts us that you have the unfortunate idea of illegally imposing your opinion over our entire atelier. In the case that your religious opinions force you to close the factory on the one day of the week, the Federation des Graveurs de Guillocheur recognize your right to do so, but provided that you compensate your workers for the time you have caused them to lose. So there's a kind of proudness. You say, okay, we're not accepting this long tradition that at Christmas and other days the atelier is closed. That means no salary paid on that day, of course. And they turned. Now we are just saying, you can do that, but pay us. So it's kind of a little fight who is he runs time. He decides over time. And they were quite known, the anarchist or the watchmaking union here, because they arrived to make a whole federation, this whole valley of all the unions, just like a big one, big unions of all different branches of watchmaking. And they made that in and they could join this one, joined in 1876 to the Fédération Jurassienne. So this is the first time, as I know, in a big area that quite like here was only watchmaking, all the unions of one area were in anarchist organization. So I go to the end. We have talked a lot of syndicalist structures, labor struggles, but that's not enough to build anarchist movement or convince people to join anarchism. What do you need more? You need to fight against the thought patterns of the time. That means the thinking of people in regional categories and nationalist categories, because that's really important. The increase of nationalism is a parallel history of the increase of anarchism. And for me, both a reaction of the changes of space and time perception in globalization. So how you can change, you can make from a regionalist, nationalist, an anarchist. So first of all, you have to change the way to call it. You don't call it citoyen. They call it compagnon. Just you change the name of the relation in between people. So you make something like a integration of some people, and you exclude others, the citoyen. And that was very important. Or what you make, that's quite maybe a strange example. I found a lot of these kind small pictures, photos of anarchists. They change these photos, each other. And why did that? When Bakunin was here, he brought with him a lot of photos of himself. And a local anarchist photographer, Sylvain Clément, made photos of Bakunin. But the last photo of Bakunin, the old Bakunin, is made by Sylvain Clément or Saint-Imier. So they exchanged these photos and they got them and they keep them. And at the meetings, they looked at the photos. Why? They create a connection between people that are not there. In between people you don't know. For example, yes, Anton Kammerer is one who made assassination against the Emperor of Germany. You have a common language in symbols of the different federations. And for me, one of the most biggest vehicles of mobilization, of socialization and mobilizations of anarchism is songs, music. They had, I just discovered about 15 songs they sang really here. And if you look at what a song can do, that's just incredible. You have some songs like La Jurassienne. I cannot play it here. I'm sorry. Just tomorrow there's a workshop on that at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If you are interested in music and anarchism mobilization, these songs, for example, La Jurassienne. These songs have different compared, for example, everybody says, okay, they have read Bakunin, they have read Kropotkin, and then at the end they said, I join anarchism. So perhaps I ask you, how many pages have you read until you had your political, not conviction, but you just were in the path? I don't think you have read a lot of books or big books. And at that time, it was quite the same. Huh? And I also have to say, like the big things like Bakunin, in his lifetime, few books were published. A lot of things are published later, and they even didn't knew the books here. But they knew there was the songs. And in one song, you can have the whole analysis of the capitalist world and the way of change the world. So, for example, this lead, this song, Ouvrier prend la machine, prend la terre et paysan, that means working men take the machine and farmer take the land. It says like, take you the production ways. Do yourself. You are the producer. You can have that. So you can. That's collectivization at the end of time and autogestion. Self-management. Yeah, exactly. You can in one song you can just pass this message. Instead of reading, write a big books, or you can just the act of singing together creates a collectivity, and the songs often they were in different languages or they have the same melodies. So imagine when they made a congress like in 72, there were comrades coming from Spain, from Italy, and so, and the people say, hey, that's the same melody, I know this melody, and they start to sing together. So it's really important. So if you're more interested in that, tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Right. But I see. I don't want to make a concurrence and all this stuff. This one last thing I want to point out. Just look at something that doesn't look political at the beginning, but is really, really political. In every meeting they made, at the end there was a tombola. You know tombola? Huh? So then, perhaps a lot of you would say, "Well, now it's only Unterhaltung. It's only just to pass time, just to trigger something." No, tombola was absolutely political. Why? Just one example. In the tombola, they want to save money for donations. Donations, for example, for victims of state repressions or for other strikes in other countries. And one example is here in 1875. There is a big strike in Göschnen. Göschnen is just where the train tunnel crosses the Alps. This was built in that same time, just from central Switzerland to south of Switzerland, going to Italy, and there was a strike of the workers, and the state, that means in Switzerland the Canton Uri in that case, sent the missionary and they shoot the strikers, and three were killed. And of course that was for the anarchists here the last proof that even in a democracy, the state sends the army. But what they did, they start to collect money for the families of these three victims, and they collected 729.45 francs. Remember, 3 francs a day they earned. That's a lot of money. And if you don't believe in revolution, and you don't believe that this kind of practice is for something, you don't give the money. And they gave the money once more. The people speaking another language, they never met, working in another country, in another job. And for me, that proves that all this talk about revolution is not just a talk. They believed in that, and it manifests in this kind of raise money. And for solidarity. So, and of course, it was always published in newspapers. It makes also some kind of social pressure. The other one already spent so much, so let's go. So, I am at the end. I do it in English here, resume. The anarchist watchmakers in the Bernese Jura, for me, they're not really exotic or a foreign body in local history, but they fit really well in time of space. Then it's globalization changed the individual people's conception of space and time. It means a compression and acceleration of space and time, which was indispensable for the formation of an anarchist identity. If not, it's not possible. You cannot believe in a global revolution if you know it doesn't see, you don't have a spirit of globality. You cannot believe in that. The constructed collective identity of the anarchist required, on the one hand, a spatial proximity between like-minded people living far away, and on the other hand, a distance to those who thought differently in the local. Translocality, we could say that. Anarchism was a response for me to the change of globalization in the local, like the increased nationalism was also at the end of 19th century. You could talk about heterogenization in the local through globalization. So yeah, in the globalization theory of today. And last, anarchist watchmakers did not fight the changes of the time by itself or the per se, but their consequences by using the new technical possibilities of transport, communication and printing to create a new world according to anarchist principles. In that way, anarchists are somehow like alternative globalizations, globalizers. So with that, I've ended the talk, and I really am now curious about questions, comments, and so on. Thank you very much.
Okay, so just a quick reminder, when you ask a question, just say first, I'll speak in this language, wait like 5 seconds, and begin, and just check with the interpreters if they are ready. And if someone could volunteer to just pass the microphone in everywhere there is questions, that would be nice. I won't do it. Thank you.
I'm going to speak English. I just wanted to ask a bit, because I have no idea how it went after the Congress, like, and if there is still anarchist tradition here, like, besides this kind of city marketing or whatever, and yeah, that would be, would be just interesting in that.
Well, the question is about heritage of anarchism here in Saint-Imier. There is still not a city marketing on that, but we are going a little bit in this direction. So there was 40 years ago, well, the people who made Espace Noir, finally, Maurice Born, for example, who just rediscovered the story. It was totally forgot here. And all the local archives, they kept nothing at all for all these anarchist brochures. This kind of globalization, they went in the whole world, and here nothing was kept. So, and that was the, and then it was also here in Saint-Imier, there is a Mémoire d'ici, that's a local documentation center. They also started to work on that, and they made like a tourist tour you can make quite easy on watchmaking and anarchism. And in the last year, they just started my own marketing. So there is a Rue Bakounine, there is La Rue de Die Petite Anarchiste, named like a novel written by a contemporary romancier. And and so there is, and also as the innovation park was made, like where the tents are, that's an innovation park that's made on the place where the restaurant La Clef was. That's a meeting point of the anarchist, who the army destroyed. You saw it in the picture there. And then when they made the brochure to get investments, it was really written that's a place of open-minded and revolutionary ideas. So that was the moment I said, okay, now it goes into marketing. So, and let's see. But still, the local museum has something, but it's not really, they don't. I think now there was the message that we are proud to be some kind of important history in something, but still not really a instrumentalization of anarchism for musicalization. But that shows also anarchism for the local authorities here have lost the fear. That's also quite interesting to see. Does it respond to your question? And thank you very much to the traductrice, traducteur, incredible work. Thank you very much. I forgot to say that before.
Oui, bonjour. Je vais parler en français.
Yes, hello. I'm going to speak in French. Yeah. I wanted to go back on the 50th anniversary. Monsieur, dans le micro, s'il vous plaît. Dans le micro, parlez dans le micro. Bah oui, bah il faut, sinon on ne peut pas traduire, monsieur. Voilà, oui, donc. Ok, so I wanted to come back to. Ouais, ok. Oui, ok. So I want to come back to the 50th anniversary of the Congress in 1922. I wanted to know if during that Congress we mentioned the rise of fascism in Italy. But of course, there are very few sources on this Congress of 1922, and I'm kind of the expert. The context is totally different. In 1872, anarchism is a.
Family of socialism that went out, and in 72, you have really this proudness that the anarchists are convinced that they will win, that they are the real heritage of the 1864 founded international. So, and at the end they win because there are for 3 years there are two international, the Marxist and the anti-authoritarian, and the Marxist disappears totally. It's a total failed. So you can say the anarchists just arrived at least to throw down the Marx project to make the international his own program, and until the end of the century, anarchism and revolutionary syndicalism was the major radical left-wing movement. Nobody is talking about communism. So don't look history from the present to the past. So nobody could know that at the end there will be a Soviet revolution in 1917. As in the 1870s, I thought there's a concurrence between and the nationalists and anarchists, nobody could say that nationalism will win and that democracy will win at the end. Because, as I told you, Switzerland was the only democratic place. In 1922, the situation it gets harder and harder and harder. Still, the anarchism is a really a big movement worldwide, really, with, especially in Southern America, in Spain, in Italy, but also Asia, Japan, Korea, South Africa, for example. But it has bigger pressure from the communists, and there are two reasons we know, like how communists dealt with anarchists during the wars. The Russian Revolution, anarchists first helped them to fight the Mensheviki, especially in Ukraine. Makhno is the word, and then later they were just crushed. And more and more, 22 is just 2 years before Mussolini gets the power in Italy. So the repression against anarchism is getting really harder, 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 and often with an alliance between social democrats and the states, and later also the communists. So that's in 22, still there's big hope of revolution, but it gets really, really and more difficult. And during the Spanish Revolution of 36-39, it was really that's the point where the last time the belief in a really big revolution that is what got disappointment. And just a lot of the generation changes as the anarchists of the 80s, 70s were formerly young people. Voila, all the new generation who is radical looks for a new ideology, and after the Russian Revolution, it is like that. This one gets the funnel of revolution, the hope of the working class. It goes more and more to Soviet, and of course, voila, we see what the result is for world history. But so 22 is really a crucial moment, but also there, they didn't know how history will end, as we don't know it today, how history will end.
Auf Deutsch.
I think because its points are really important topic. I repeat the question, of course. The question was, now we have seen they use this kind of technologies, but what was their... Is only a way of doing go ahead with the propaganda and revolution, or what were their wishes, ideals, what did they dreamed about? So also in the way of technologies, and the anarchists were often showed as anti-modernist for Marx, as Ludit. Ludit, this movement would destroy the machine just to stop modernization, stop industrialization, just to preserve handmade work, and it's absolutely not the case. They are really modernist and the absolute technological affine, and they find machine great, but the problem is the machine in the capitalist system. That the machine will increase the inequalities, will increase the exploitation, and for that it's absolutely fast. The watchmaker or have to appropriate the machines, and they try to do that. They tried to form collective ateliers of production and to raise money to buy this machine, to produce faster in the market, and faster means to work less. Always have this idea of work less and have more spare time for education. Education is really, really high scene. And so, and they draw a wall that the producer are owner of the producing machines or whatever you want on the farmers of the land. And then there are all syndicates together, and there's the local community that's quite like Bookchin communalism. You find quite links between the federalism of Proudhon, and that makes the link. So that all decisions should be made as local as possible, but always in a global perspective. So and that's what a little bit what they tried. It's like as autogestion, a self-made production of the watches, but still in this global capital market. So that was really the idea, and of course there were only small steps they could make, and also fights because between the syndicalists and the trade unionists, where put money. For example, I tell the history about the Italian anarchist. They had one rich guy, Carlo Caffiero, who his family was really rich, and they had a lot of money. And there was the fight of where to put the money. And one big part of the money went in La Baronata, that's a villa of Bakunin in the Lago Maggiore and Ticino, where he lived his last life. And here they were really fed up because they say, hey, this money, we need this money just to make a collective atelier to show that an alternative is possible, and you give it to real estate market. They were really fed up, and they were all fed up that they used the money for a insurrectional campaign in region of Neapel, Bandra and Matese, who also failed. Failed, but this didn't work at the moment. So he was fed up. He really say, hey, put the money in collectivization of the machines, and to show the world that an alternative is possible. So this kind of also the different opinions in the way to get revolution insurrectionally or by trade union work was already there. Does it respond to your question? Okay, thank you very much.
Je vais parler en français.
Okay, so I wanted that you tell us a little bit more about the fourth resolution. So I wanted that you tell us a bit more about the fourth resolution and the question of statistics. Why were statistics important for anarchists? Why was that put forward? I never quite understood why it was so important. So thanks.
This question, first, someone who has tomorrow here a conference is asking if someone in the room has a technological knowledge to help to put down the big screen and beamer and to connect that, because there is some material there, but we have no idea how to use it. So perhaps it would be cool to go to, what's your name? So Jens would need your help. Thank you very much. The question that was posed, it's about the fourth revolution of the Congress Centimier. Nice. Nobody asked me about the fourth revolution until now. The other three are always in the focus. Just to say, the first revolution is to say that the decision took in Den Haag are not valid. Voilà, it's first. The second one is like that there's a insurrectional way of the structure of power. And the third is trade unionism. And the fourth is really put emphasis on statistic. And you see, statistic, what the hell has a statistic to do with revolution? That's really important. The anarchists, they were, I said before, like they loved technique, but they were really empirical, and they see as scientists. So first of all, they were anti-clerical, because so that clerical religion speculation, we are scientists because of that. And because of that, later they were really adept of Darwin and of the evolution theory, as it was anti-clerical, but they were positivist. So that goes back to Auguste Comte, a French philosopher, who said that you can analyze the whole world, but you have to collect all the time the informations. So they all the time here they made statistic. How how many people work in different branches, how did they earn, how many pieces they made, and so just to have an analyze of society. Well, and then what they made later, and they thought that's the basis for to analyze the world, to take the right decision when to make general strike, when to go to revolution. You have to have the knowledge, if not you are lost, and that was the idea. The thing a little bit where they missed a little bit, it was that they believed so much in revolution, and they believed so much in the antagonism of capital and work, that they interpret the numbers they had in that way. So they thought next year the revolution will be, and it will start in Paris, for example, and then it doesn't happen. And I think that's quite hard if you are really, you feel a scientific and a scientist, and you predict revolution so long your methods and starting your methods, and then revolution doesn't happen. So, but this kind of statistic, revolution by statistic, it's really important thing, and there are good studies about anarchism and science at that time. Especially the Spanish anarchists were really into science. Quite interesting.
Merci. Je sais pas si on m'entend là. Oui.
I'm not sure if you can hear me. I got asked before if in the movement of the years here in a lot of women has participated in the movement. I have more or less read the little book, but I don't remember the number. You have a good amount of leader, but in the movement itself, we're talking about a female worker who was animative of one group. Could you give us some elements of this part?
Market authority is capitalism, moral authority is the church, for example, but also the patriarchy. So, and that was in a theory also of the anarchists here. We have also fight the patriarchy, but in the practice, you don't see the same aim. And it's, and you don't, and we would expect like big anarchist figures like Louise Michel was at the same time, or later Emma Goldman also here, but you don't find this eminent figure. That doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. That sometimes also the problem that the sources are not there to say. I can only say that which kind of sources I looked at and that there are almost no women. So all the delegates, only men, and for all the countries of the Congress, in the bureau of the federations, only men. All over Europe that time, here also, in the all list I have of the associations, anarchists, only men. But we know that watchmaking was primarily a female world of working. So where are they exactly? And if, you know, also at the Congress, you can put the focus on delegates, but all the local population, well, there was both sexes, and they has to be there, the wives, but the women. But what they exactly the important? It's so difficult to say. One theory I have is that the watchmaking industry has different production steps of productions, huh? And often the steps are done or by male or by women and female, and that the anarchists or the male done steps of work, they were the one who first were organized a syndicate, and the profession of women were later organized a syndicate. That could be a reason why just in this 10-15 years they didn't arrive really to join the movement really. But there is in this Fédération Horlogère, the district de Courtellerie, there are like female professions, so they were there. And also they had a mutual aid and insurance for health. There, women were accepted as a totally egalitarian members, even if they were not married and so on. And that was a difference to the other local organization. They were not anarchists. So there is something. And I found just one quote, against an example, or an idea why they didn't push more this kind of fight of patriarchate. That is one strategic reason. They say, it's written in a newspaper, that says it's for us already really difficult to destroy some mental barriers like nationalism and regionalism if we try at the same time to destroy also the barrier of the two sexes, we will lose. So, and that there seems to be a quite also a restrictive way of looking at women at work because they're often seen as the one who works in the factory and they are responsible for the dumping of what we earn. So apparently there was like kind of conservative way of looking on the two sexes that they decide strategically not to put that on the first plan, but that are really hypotheses. And as this, the history is made by them on the top, and often by male. And we need more interpretation of the source to find the woman, because they were there, of course. So and voila, but of course we would like wish they would more be more present.
Yeah, my question is, I don't know if you can even answer that, but if you compare like the anarchist movement, even like the question is there such a thing than like one anarchist movement? But if you compare like anarchism today with like back then, would you say back then they were more internationally unified? There was like more a collective struggle? Because like I'm not even qualified to say that as well. It's just my personal how I see it, that like maybe there's a little bit a lack of international platforms where you like really exchange. It's like a lot really local. So I would love to hear like your perception of it.
Okay, it's also a difficult question because we don't have to look history back, and often it's also anarchists today, we don't know exactly do they really refer to the past or to the past 19th century. But what we can of course see is the main principles of anarchism were already there. They made also practice and tactical theory like propaganda by the deed, like direct action, general strike, syndicalism, that was already there. So what was not there here, as I say, like the kind of anarcho-feminism was not present here, and it's not present in a lot of other countries with a huge anarchist movement. The ecological thinking was not there. On the Kropotkin starts to have some, on Elisée Reclus starts to have some thinking about environment and anarchism, but this idea of also the exploitation of the resource of the nature is also is a question of the system capitalism that's not there at that time. So it's always difficult to make direct lines to today, but just respond a little bit the question. Okay, thanks.
I'm going to speak in English. I really can connect to this question. I would be interested if you could say something about the relationship towards violence as a method of revolution in these times. I would be interested if you could say something about the relationship of the movement towards violence as a revolutionary method.
Thank you very much for the question. It's a crucial question. the question of violence, also the question who separates a lot also in between the anarchist movement in history. As I said before, talking about how we should spend the money of Cafiero in uprisings in southern Italy or in just building a collective factories, there is already a response about is violence could be the way. The anarchists here, the watchmaker, they were not pacifist. No, they were convinced that revolution will be bloody, because they were convinced, of course, that them in power will never leave the power. So, and the general strike will be bloody or of kind of a violent thing. But they thought that that's It's because antagonism between capital and work, you cannot just dissolve that. So, but they were quite convinced that it will be in a quite natural way. So the violence will be immanent in the changes. You don't have to by yourself to put violence inside. So just don't start too early with violence. Just organize, syndicate, just construct the world of the ideal world of tomorrow in the present. That's their thinking. So as the syndicalist, it's not only a method of to go to revolution, but also a school of revolution and a school of the time after the revolution. That's classical anarcho-syndicalism theory, like you can find at Rudolf Rocker. It's quite imminent here, but they were not pacifist. They saw the Commune de Paris, 1871, was for them the reference. It will not go without violence. So, but they were quite critical when just small groups just take arms and started to make an uprising. Yeah. But at the same time, they say the question of methods. Every local federation have decided for its own which method is the best according to them, the context they have. So that's quite this kind of autonomy of the groups to still find in anarchism today. So voila. That's a bit. But I've seen in the four resolutions, you have two resolutions who could be a little bit contradictory, the second and third one, and it shows already this kind of diversity, but do everybody should have his own voila, way to go to revolution. Is that cool? The translators who have to work a lot, they ask me maybe a last question and then they merit their break. Is there a last question in the room?
Okay, hello, it's me again. Please don't leave too fast. As we said, we need help, so please go to the volunteers desk in Espace Noir, but also right now and right here, we need your help.